All right, so we are on our third week of studying Ruth here. We're going to be doing Ruth 3 today. And then the last class for Ruth on the study on Ruth will be next Sunday, where we'll do Ruth 4, and then we'll do an overview, just a conclusion of everything that we went over so far. I just want to say thank you up to this point right now. The classes have been great. Participation has been fantastic, and that makes it a lot easier for the teacher whenever the participation's high. So thank you, everyone. All right, so quick overview for anyone just to kind of catch everybody up. So as we know from the first chapter, this is during the days of the judges. There's troubled times, violence and crime. It says that man did what was right in his own eyes. So there was a famine in the land of Bethlehem, and Elimelech decides to take his family to the country of Moab. So after coming to Moab, over a span of about 10 years, Elimelech dies. Their two sons, Naomi and Elimelech's two sons, Chilion and Mahlon, marry two Moabite women, Ruth and Orpah. Those sons also died within a period of about 10 years. This left Naomi and Orpah and Ruth as childless widows. Then after learning that the famine in Bethlehem was over, Naomi decided that she was going to go back to Bethlehem. Orpah decided to stay in her home country of Moab, and Ruth pledged her allegiance to Naomi at this point. She says, "For where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried." So then Ruth needs to help provide for Naomi at that point, once they return to Bethlehem. She goes out to glean in the fields and happens to come across Boaz's field. So in chapter 2, Boaz was introduced, and it says that he's in the lineage of the kinsman redeemer. Okay, and that's pretty much where we left off last week, in that Boaz has found favor in Ruth. He's given her much more than was required of him, much more than was necessary. And that's where we left at this point. At the very end of the class period last time, we hit on this term kinsman redeemer a little bit. And I want to go back over that just because it's mentioned 26 times in this book. Redeemer or redemption is mentioned 26 times in the book of Ruth. So there's got to be some importance to this. There's got to be some importance to this term. So there are two legal institutions that are utilized here in Ruth that come together as one in the form of redeemer or redemption. So the first of that is property redemption. And let's all turn over to Leviticus. So I'll turn over to Leviticus chapter 25. And I'm going to get a volunteer to read verses 23 through 28. Leviticus chapter 23 through 28. Going to get somebody to read? Got one. We got Steve. Got it. Thank you, Steve.
"The land shall not be sold permanently, for the land is mine, for you are strangers and sojourners with me. And in all the land of your possessions you shall grant redemption of the land. If one of your brethren becomes poor and has sold some of his possession, and it is his kinsman redeemer comes to redeem it, then he may redeem it what his brother has sold. Or if the man has no one to redeem it, but he himself is able to redeem it, then let him count the years since its sale, and restore the balance of the man to whom it sold, that he may return to his possession. But if he is not able to have it restored to himself, then what was sold shall remain in the hand of him who bought it unto the year of Jubilee, and in the Jubilee it shall be released, and he shall return to its possession."
Okay, so Elimelech left Bethlehem, went to Moab, they've come back, he is no longer alive. What's happened with the land at this point? What's that? His near kin, does he have near kin? Yes, he does have near kin. But so at that point, what is the factor with what happened to Elimelech's heirs? They passed away, right? They have passed away up to this point. So what happens to that land if it's not redeemed? Keeps it till Jubilee, right? Okay, so by Ruth being redeemed, what would happen? What would happen? So if Ruth was not redeemed, what would happen to Elimelech's name? What does it say about Elimelech's name? It says it will be blotted out, right? But the word says it would be blotted out. Okay, so Elimelech would essentially be removed from the history of the Israelites. His name would be removed from the history of the Israelites. So would you say land was very important to these families at this point in time? Right? Land is of very much importance to them at this point. So if no one claims his land, both the sons have passed away, Orpah decides to go back to stay in Moab, right? Naomi, maybe she is too old to have children at this point. I don't, you know, who knows what the scenario is, that, but it doesn't really tell us much of that. But Ruth is really the only hope here to be able to keep Elimelech's name continuing, right? Okay. So that's the institution of property redemption. So somebody would redeem them and then redeem Ruth, and they would inherit that property of Elimelech's. Okay. The second legal institution here is that of the levirate marriage. So let's turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 25. Deuteronomy chapter 25. And can I get someone to read verses 5 and verse 6? Randy? Thank you, sir. We're going to read 5 through 6.
If brothers dwell together, and one of them dies and has no son, the wife of the dead man shall not marry outside the family to a stranger. Her husband's brother shall go into her and take her as his wife and perform the duty of a husband's brother to her. And the first son whom she bears shall succeed the name of his dead brother, that his name may not be blotted out of Israel.
Okay, so in this sense, in the levirate marriage, what was the role of the redeemer in this? What's that? Produce offspring for his brother, right? To continue his heir, to create the heir, to continue his name, to continue his name on. So if Ruth's not redeemed if Ruth is not redeemed in this story, we talked about it. His name is blotted out. Name is blotted out. So what in this story is the significance to us? What is her redemption? And I know I'm skipping forward a little bit, but what is her redemption? What is the significance to us? You got a microphone? Donovan? She is in the lineage of Christ. Okay, this is a busy, and I'm sorry if the font is a little small, but up at the top, you've got Boaz, who is related to Elimelech, right? Elimelech was married to Naomi. Down here, you've got Salmon and Rahab. There, they birthed Boaz. Okay, so you have Boaz who redeems Ruth, right? Boaz redeems Ruth, and we see the lineage through Ruth here of Obed, Jesse, David, and then Christ. It cuts that out here. So the benefit, the significance to us of this book is that it continues this lineage on through David, on to Christ. Okay, so we see Christ all the way through in this book. The reasoning for showing a lot of this, and we'll get into this in chapter 4. But I think for the significance of the kinsman redeemer itself, It's important to know that of why that was utilized in this book, and just utilized in general throughout history. Right? God uses that within His plan. It's kind of hard for me, I don't know most of you, but it's always been hard for me to sit down and read the book of Leviticus. It's just a difficult book for me to read. It's a difficult book for me to really just get interested in, but it's amazing how you see stories like this that then ties to some of the things and aspects that are in the book of Leviticus to make it valid and be able to relate to it. So I just wanted to kind of go into that at the very beginning before we dove into the text to really get an idea of what this means as we step through chapter 3. Okay, so chapter 3, we're going to start off, we're going to read Ruth chapter 3, and we're going to read verses 1 through 5. Can I get someone that would volunteer for that? Chapter 3, 1 through 5. Scott?
Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not seek rest for you, that it may be well with you? Is not Boaz our relative with whose young woman you were? See, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Wash therefore and anoint yourself and put on your cloak and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to this man until he has finished eating and drinking. But when he lies down, observe the place where he lies. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do." And she replied, "All that you say, I will do."
Okay, so each week we've had a different scene. Scene 1, scene 2, scene 3. So in scene 3 now, we are at Ruth at the threshing floor. That's what the title of this section has. So, verse 1, what's Naomi trying to say in verse 1 when she says, "My daughter, should I not seek rest for you, that it may be well with you?" What's she trying to say here? What's that? Okay. Provide a future for her. What else?
Security.
Security, right? We know what position Naomi and Ruth are in at this point, right? We've talked about that over the last few weeks. We know that Ruth had given up what? What had she given up?
Everything.
She'd given up everything. She'd given up her family. She'd given up her friends. She'd given up her protection. She'd given up her own country to come with Naomi. And is it not too far-fetched to think that Naomi obviously understands this, and she's somewhat showing her appreciation to Ruth in helping her out here? Thoughts on that? Okay. So, what's the process for winnowing barley and the purpose of the threshing floor? So we'll start with the first. What's the process? What's the process of winning barley? Throw it up. So you throw it up in the air, so the chaff blows away, and what's left? The barley is left, right? Okay. Where were these threshing floors usually located? What's that? Near the barley field? I hear something? Kyle?
In a windy place.
A lot of the context that I read was usually on the east side of the city. They were usually located outside the city, on the east side of the city, where there was nothing to block, and usually the westerly winds, which are more predominantly during this time, would blow through the threshing floor, take the chaff away, and leave the barley that was there. Okay, so the context of this is it's usually outside of the city, away from the city. So they had to go away from city. Where this was taking place was not necessarily right in the middle of town, right? Where Naomi went to go, or where Ruth went to go here in a moment, or where what's proposed by Naomi is away from the town. That it's away from the town, right? Right, and we'll get to that here in just a second. So, let me push forward. So, why Why did Naomi tell her to uncover his feet and lie down? What's that?
Your feet are exposed, you would probably wake up too.
Okay, good. Yeah. You get a microphone. Here, Peggy.
I read that it was a custom that meant that she was actually asking him to be the Redeemer, to marry her so that her husband's name could go forward.
Go forward, right. Yeah, I think that's, I think there's a couple of things that we need to, look into this. So one thing, it could, in theory, show her allegiance or her dependence on him, right? She's at a lower position than he is. So it could show that this is her expression of her dependence on him. And remember that without the Redeemer and the protection that it provided for Elimelech's name, as you mentioned, it would die, right? His name would pass away. I read some commentaries that you could read sexual connotation into this. That obviously does not show context in this story whatsoever. So what can we say about Ruth's boldness here?
She does what she's told.
But I mean, to take that step, right? That's showing a lot of faith on her end in Naomi's plan. Do you agree?
Especially
because she's from the country of Moab. She's a foreign woman. Was this customary? Apparently. I don't know that. I mean, did women normally go and ask for someone to be a redeemer? Tamar, yep. So Ruth obviously approves of it. It doesn't so show that she just thought that this was some crazy, absurd plan that Naomi put out there that was out in left field. I don't want to read too much into it, but she obviously approved of it. As she said, she replies, "All that you say, I will do." There was no other context to that conversation there. So, so let's move forward. Let's go into Ruth chapter 3. We're going to go to, we're going to read 6 through 13. Can I get a, Scott? Yeah, Scott.
I should say my thought on this about uncovering her feet. I mean, my assumption is this is the traditional way this is done, you know, in terms of her asking to be a redeemer.
Uh-huh.
Ruth from Moab probably would not have known how to do this.
Yeah.
I mean, so she's looking at Naomi's advice. Naomi says, basically, this is how you do it in Israel. Because we go through this, even this whole redemption process, or things like when Boaz goes, sits at the gate and stuff. I mean, there's the way they do it.
It's customary.
It seems weird to us,
yeah.
But it would have been the customs of the time that we really don't understand, but we get to kind of see it when we look into this story.
Yeah, and this is really Naomi's first time to actually, I feel like, be able to, you know, try to repay Ruth back for, you know, her allegiance to her. You know, this is her. She's taking this opportunity to be able to walk her through exactly how this needs to happen. Okay, so we'll go to Ruth 3, and Ruth 3, we'll read 6 through 13.
So she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law told her to do. When Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. In the middle of the night, something startled the man, and he turned, and there was a woman lying at his feet. "Who are you?" he asked. "I am the servant Ruth," she said. "Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a guardian redeemer of our family." "The Lord bless you, my daughter," he replied. this kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger man, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, do not be afraid. I will do what you ask. All the people of the town know that you are a woman of noble character. Although it is true that I am a guardian redeemer of the family, there is another who is more closely related than I. Stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to do his duty as your guardian redeemer, good, let him redeem you. But if he's not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie here until morning.
Okay, so she goes down to the flesh. So she takes Naomi's advice, and now we're going to see this play out. She heads down to the threshing floor, just as Naomi had told her to. And there's some significance here of, well, why do you think there's some significance to the story of when she would go to him? It says that after he had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. And that's when she went down. What do you think the context of that is?
Well, he's going to be tired and go to sleep. He won't know she's there until sometime later.
Yep. Okay.
Keegan, I also get the idea that this is probably not a place where women hung out. That makes sense.
Not a place where women normally hung out. Yeah, absolutely. I don't think. I mean, a lot of work being done here, you know, by them. But definitely not context. Just given the way that they kind of discreetly follows him in there. I don't. I would agree with you on that. Any more comments on that?
It's remarkable that in all of this portrait of Ruth and Boaz, Boaz is aware that she has come from Moab, which is drenched in a culture of death, the sacrifice of children to Molech. He knows all of that, and he doesn't hesitate to welcome her into a friendship.
Just throughout this entire process, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That he doesn't hold back, knowing who she is and what her nation believes and does. He acts with a considerable graciousness to her.
Yeah. Yeah, we've seen a lot of context of that throughout the first two chapters of this book, of his willingness to be open to her, even given her past,
yeah,
where she came from. Absolutely. So as we move forward here, so what's the significance of Ruth being labeling herself as a servant? It says here that says, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your servant." What's this context, the context of this servant? Let's go back to chapter 2 and verse 13. We got verse 2 in chapter 13 says, "Then she said, I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants." So giving two different types of servants here, right? You've got a maid servant who is his servant, and then you've got a slave servant. What's the difference here?
One is bound to get the other one by agreement.
By agreement there. Okay? What else? Does a slave servant have any of these privileges that Ruth is being given? It wouldn't have those privileges. Why is that? Why would they not have those privileges? What's that? Just consider part of the property. Yeah. right? And then what examples do we have of that of a maidservant that she is referring to herself at this point in chapter 3?
She had previously gone out with his maid.
What's that?
She had previously gone out with his maid.
He placed her there, right? He put her in this position. This was not something that would be customary for him to put her in this position. He put her there. He gave her this opportunity to have the privileges of the Israelite household. Like, she's getting all these different privileges of being walk along with his maidservants that would not have been, you know, from a woman of from the country of Moab, as you mentioned earlier, would not have been offered to her. Right? Okay. So she was enjoying these privileges. Her type of servant has been elevated to allow her. Let's go over to Genesis chapter 30. Genesis chapter 30. And I'll read verses 3 through 5. Genesis chapter 30, we'll read 3 through 5. Then she said, "Here is my servant, Bilhah. Go into her, so that she may give birth on my behalf, that even I may have children through her." So she gave him her servant, Bilhah, as a wife, and Jacob went into her. And Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. So what opportunity is he putting her in line for here? That's consistent what's being shown here.
Producing an heir.
From a servant to a wife?
Producing an heir.
That's what, back to the kinsman redeemer, right? This is what that's what's getting put in place here whenever you see some little small context of this difference between a maid servant from a slave servant. She's getting this opportunity to now to be put in the line to be able to potentially be able to have an heir. Or birth an heir. Okay? So what does Ruth mean by spread your wings over your servant? I think this is where you were getting at earlier, Peggy. What's that? I think this comment is twofold. It's two separate meanings. Blanket is right, and I think that has a little bit to do with the kind of the Lord, Boaz taking on the Lord's embodiment of his character, right? And spreading his wings. And if we'll let's turn back to chapter 2 and verse 12. Let me go back over here to it. 2 and verse 12 tells us, "The Lord repay you for what," this is Boaz talking to Ruth, "the Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Okay, so he's already referred to these wings. What's the wings he talking about? Protection, right? Remember what position she's in. What position is he in? We've been talking about that a lot. Her and Naomi need somebody to take care of them. Otherwise, their future is very grim. Up to this point. Okay? So, I think I flipped over. Sorry. Make sure I... So what was the first act of kindness that Ruth performed that he talks about here? What's that? First act of kindness was, you know, showing her allegiance to Naomi, right? That was the first act of kindness that he's talking about here in, where he says, verse 10, yep. And he said, "May you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. You have made this last kindness greater than the first, in that you have not gone after young men, whether poor or rich." So what he's talking about here is That first act of kindness is whenever she left her family and her country to stay with Naomi, that's the first act of kindness that he's talking about here. Okay? So could Ruth have searched for other men, young men, to marry? Sure she could have. Why didn't she?
Naomi had even released her to go back to her own people.
Yep.
But her allegiance, because of the relationship she had with Naomi, compelled her to stay with her.
Yeah, you're going to see that in some of my key takeaways from this. This is just as we're seeing this love story with Boaz and Ruth develop through this book. You can't take away the other love story that's going on, and that's Ruth and Naomi and her love for Naomi, that she wants to take care of her. I think that's what drives her to continue, you know, doing everything that she's doing here. Yeah, yeah. But all the way back to her. I mean, she not just proposed to Naomi, but also to her God as well. And that's where we're seeing God's hand in this entire story walk its way through. Tim.
Yeah, maybe a lesson for us that is not explicitly stated here, but when you think about the two daughter-in-laws, the other one, Orpah. Yeah, Orpah. The
not
other
Oprah.
One. Yeah, and Ruth. I'm sorry.
I said not. One of my slides from the beginning had Oprah in it.
Oh, okay. Orba, Oprah, whatever. Yeah, Orpah. I'm sorry. Thank you. My wife knows that name. I didn't. But anyway, you think about those two people making a choice, right? Ruth made a choice that is now being praised here. I might say generally she made a choice for the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Orpah made the easy choice. To go back to people that are familiar, the language, the younger men, the protection there.
Protection of her family.
And she's essentially forgotten,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, she's doggone. Once that's mentioned, she doesn't get mentioned.
Yeah, and so in 2022, it's the same thing. There are people that are making a decision for the Lord, following him, and they will be remembered and rewarded. There are those that are making a decision to go back to Egypt or wherever, to stay where they're comfortable, to live for themselves, that kind of thing. So there seems that lesson is...
To be some context in it help allude to that. Yeah, I like that. So next here. So what's the significance of Ruth... Not worth. What's the significance of Ruth being a worthy woman? Not worth. Above the whole village. For what she had done, right? Proverbs 31. Yeah.
This was just a prior comment. Yeah. I think it's interesting, you know, she's a worthy woman, she's wise, and I think she knows that Boaz has been compassionate, and it's interesting that Boaz says to her, the Lord repay you and reward your work by given you by the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge. So then later she asks him, you be the answer to that prayer. You be my protection that the Lord is providing for me. And I think that's just a beautiful picture of Boaz's character, of her understanding that the Lord provides, you know, through people. And it's just a beautiful picture of the wings in both
and how
instances.
It all comes full circle, right?
Yes.
Like even with this, okay? So if we go back to the first verse of chapter 2, how did they label Boaz whenever it tells us in 2 and verse 1? What do they tell us about Boaz? What is he?
He's worthy.
What's that?
A mighty man
or a my verse says a worthy man. So same context here. Michael here. Jim.
My translation says that she was a woman of noble character.
Yeah.
Noble
character. And I think that's whenever we went over that last week, that's exactly what we were talking about, that that word worthy, is that it meant that he who had impeccable character, i.e. Boaz did. Now it's tying that back in with Ruth as well, that she is in the same position, same situation as Boaz is here. The whole thing's coming. Yeah, Scott.
I think this, and I think this has already been said, but it's just to echo what a lot of people are saying, but we think about the time frame this is occurring. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. But yet, despite that, here we have a great example. You've got Boaz, who is a man of God, and doing what he's supposed to do. I mean, he's very godly. And now you have Ruth, who's a Moabite, but had told Naomi, your God will be my God, and she's demonstrating it here.
Yep.
Could she have went after other men? Yes, but not according to the law, to follow what God's principles was to do what she was doing. She is demonstrating her love for God, too, and everything she's doing. So you've got two great examples here in a climate that is really not that good when you read Judges of people still serving God.
Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, but I think you're right. She's keeping her word, right? She made her word to Ruth, and she's following through with it. Could she have got into this and been like, "Ooh, this may be a little bit too tough. I'm gonna figure something else out." Of course, she could have. But she, to your point, she's keeping her word. She's following through to push this thing forward. So, is it Boaz's duty to seek redemption for Ruth?
She's
second in line. So is it his duty?
If the first duty
is not, right, then it is his duty. Obviously, the context of the story doesn't tell us whether the first has made amendments to it. We'll get to that in chapter 4 next week. But we obviously see this love story starting to develop through these first three chapters of his willingness to want to do that. Get a mic up here. What's that?
I'm a PE teacher.
Yeah, she can yell.
Well, speaking to her worth, don't you think it's interesting that there had to be something significant about Ruth that Naomi didn't further encourage her? Mm-hmm. No, really, you won't fit here. You stay. Naomi didn't do that. Naomi said, go ahead and come with me. And then when she got there, something different about her that Boaz recognized, this woman was not from here, but there was something significant about her that he put her with those maidservants and that he welcomed her when he woke up and found her there. So, God had this plan for the lineage long before people knew anything about it. And he put something significant in Ruth so that Naomi recognized it and Boaz recognized it and the people of the village recognized it, so much so that Boaz, even though it wasn't his first responsibility, he was willing, even though it wasn't his job either. So God put that there for a purpose that nobody recognized until we can see it looking back.
Yeah.
But at that time, they didn't recognize what that was. They just knew there was something there.
Yeah, her character definitely speaks for itself throughout this entire story, that it was definitely there. Steve, Jim and Steve.
I think we also have another good example of Boaz's character here, because it was pretty evident that he was smitten with Ruth.
Yeah.
But yet he still stayed within the tradition of saying, there's one that is closer
and I need
to you than
to
I am, and we need to, give him his opportunity before we move forward here.
We need to go through the right steps, the proper protocol.
And we're still seeing the providence of God here. We know that he's moving his hand in all of this.
Obviously underlying.
But it is a good example of his character.
Yeah, absolutely. Steve?
I think there's an element here that is never really discussed, but I know it had to have gone through Boaz's mind, and that's the fact that he understood his own lineage, having come through Rahab, who received the blessings that she did as a proselyte, coming from Jericho, and his own existence, his own family's blessings came from someone that was a foreigner.
Outside, yeah.
And that had to have crossed his mind.
Absolutely.
That here's an opportunity to repay that kindness that has been extended to my family.
I wish that was something I would have brought up whenever we brought that up, but I think that's great. I think that's a great point, for sure.
Along those lines, I think it is extremely significant that Rahab, Ruth, and a couple of generations following Bathsheba are mentioned in the lineage.
Mm-hmm.
They were all non-Jews.
Yeah.
And therefore, we can see God's work in this to bring the Gentiles to him.
Yeah.
And Boaz was very familiar, as Steve expressed. However, Naomi gives the name of mother-in-law a very good spin on it.
For sure.
We sometimes think of a mother-in-law very differently.
I don't know.
But she was a wonderful mother-in-law.
Yeah.
For 40 years, my best friend was my mother-in-law.
In-law. Yeah.
And she would do anything for me, even though I was married to her son. And this is what I see in Naomi.
Yeah.
And Ruth saw the value in all of this too.
Right.
That there was a connection. And of course we use in our marriage vows a lot of time. Mm-hmm. Entreat me not to leave you. Your mm-hmm. God is my God. Where you go, I will go. But that was between two women.
Mm-hmm.
And we use it between husband and wife. These are very significant lessons that we need to...
Yeah, very, very much a love story in that relationship as there is between Boaz. All right, I'm going to have to run here. All right, we already kind of rolled through this. All right, I'm going to read this really fast, 14 through 18. So she lay at his feet until the morning, but arose before one could recognize another. And he said, "Let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing hold." And he said, "Bring the garment you are wearing and put it on her." Then she went into the city, and when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "How did you fare, my daughter?" Then she told her all that the man had done for her, saying, "These 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said to me, 'You must not go back empty-handed to your mother-in-law.'" She replied, "Wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest, but will settle the matter today." Okay, so we see, one of the questions that I put up here is, why be so discreet? Obviously, we've talked about their reputation a lot today, of what their reputation meant to them and what their reputation was. I think that has a lot to do of why they're being discreet here. They don't want this to ruin their reputation and making somebody think something happened that didn't actually happen. So what does the ample supply of barley signify to Naomi? I think Boaz completely understands that by redeeming Ruth, he is also redeeming Naomi at the same time. And by giving her that barley and sending it back with Ruth, he's telling Naomi, "Look, I'm taking care of you too. I'm going to do what I can to take care of you as well in this storyline." So how do you think Naomi and Ruth are feeling at this point? I think there's several different things that they're probably feeling. Nervous because they have to wait. remember, if the first kinsman was to redeem Ruth, this whole story would be blown up, right? If he went to the first kinsman and he decided, I'll take her, this whole thing would have been negligible at that point. But it didn't. We'll see that next week. And they had the opportunity to turn their lives around, right? This changes their entire future with this taking place. So key takeaways, application: simple acts of kindness can bring about much joy. Obviously, I think they're excited with this, but you see kindness throughout this entire book, between both sides, between Naomi, between Ruth, between Boaz, between the Lord. You see it instrumental throughout the entire book. Sometimes you have to put in a little work to get what you want. Sometimes you have to work for it. There were things that they had to do throughout that where they were instruments of God's hand. And they had to, sometimes we get put in situations that we may be uncomfortable with, but, know that there's an eternal, there's a purpose for that. God's hand's always at work. We just have to get out. Sometimes we just can't get in the way of it. Let the Lord work, work through us. So how can we also implement God's characteristics in your own life? Just like Boaz, right? We read, there's several examples throughout this entire book of Boaz, taking on or embodying God's characteristics. And I think he's a great example for that. And as we've mentioned several times today, the relationship from Ruth and Naomi is something to not pass over. I know it's a love story about Boaz and Ruth, but the relationship between those two can't be removed. And we got to have patience. They obviously had to have patience to see this play out. So thank y'all so much for your time. We'll do Ruth 4 and a conclusion next week.